I've never seen so many people telegraphed as possibly dying. Probably since like 24 or Lost.
Oh my God.
Captain's Pod, Stardate 14-52-74.9. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she had her library card revoked for being a meanie jelly breenie. It's Ambassador Danae.
If I'm a jelly breen, then I think that I'll just bore back into the library and then steal my next card.
But then you'd need to know where the cards were kept.
If I'm a breen, I'll just kill people until I find the cart.
No, okay, yeah, no, there's mm-hmm. a problem with that. There's only that kind of shortens your window of opportunity, because you start killing people, you're going to get found. So you've got to get really lucky that you kill the, or you could torture the person that might know where the library cards are, the librarian cards.
Boy, should would be a great thing if there was actually a way that this amazing library was protected.
Still the biggest sin. It's still the biggest sin of the episode. It's so dumb.
Still bothers
Why didn't they have
me.
Bigger lasers? That's amazing. How are you, Ambassador? Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
How are you, Ambassador? But more about me.
But more importantly, me.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm coming off of a nice weekend in the woods with some friends, and that was really nice. Mm. And then this week, I'm thinking about having a guest come over to the house. So my little brain is filled with things to do around the house and around my life, which is nice. It's nice to kind of have like purpose and be like, oh, I got to do this next. And
have a direction.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I wish I could just stop and play video games, though.
Right.
That'd be nice.
And just watch Discovery from season one onwards.
No. I don't want to watch. I want to play video games.
It's really interesting that you've kind of basically enjoyed this season, but you're pretty certain you don't want to go back and do season one.
No.
Not just based on like my feelings, but just the overall feeling of the show.
Yeah, it's like choosing to read of the final book of a series and you're really enjoying it, but not so much that you need to go back and figure out what you missed. Like they haven't done something on the screen that's made me feel like I missed out. And I think that's an important thing to kind of point out, is that they really are doing a good job for that brand new viewer.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't feel like I'm missing something, that I need to go back and find it in all of the episodes that exist.
I think the only one that would be tempting would be season two, because that introduces the Enterprise, Pike, Ethan Peck, Spock. Like, that would have a lot of Strange New World, a little bit of Strange New World's foundation. Like, I'm excited to see more episodes with Pike. So I think that would be something that might excite you as well. Because if I suddenly had, like, another season of TNG to watch, I would be immediately watching that, regardless of wherever it takes place. But yeah, I see what you mean about not this season not really telling you that you've missed out on much from previous years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with that, let's make sure your brain is even clearer by going in and doing some predictions.
Emails.
Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, well, email. Check the description if you want to skip ahead and not get spoiled. Skip over to 10 forward. Next week, we do have some lovely... lovely non-prediction related emails that we're going to get to. But this week we're going to wrap up some of our final, hey, what happens at the end? Well, what happens in this episode and kind of what's going to happen for the next two episodes? Because in general, 9 and 10 kind of smoosh together. So overall predictions, I believe that the Lagrange point, which is this week's episode, will be about balance and harmony, and that the discovery... Woo! It's all about balance. The discovery will have to find a specific harmonic balancing point to get through some kind of anomaly to get to the final, the progenitor tech and whatnot. I think that the friendly breen that was helping out Moll will be related to luck. Maybe a mother. Maybe a female breen that we haven't seen yet.
That just got me interested.
That would be cool. And I think Rhaenyra is dead. Danae, what are your thoughts for LaGrange Point on the last two episodes?
I think I shared them last week. Yes.
No, you did actually. I was just about to say, you think that this tech will be used just once and that's it, it's done, which will mean they'll have to choose.
Well, I think it's a once and done for a period of time. Because
yes.
If it wouldn't make sense if it was a once and done it had been used in the past, because that correct. wouldn't make any sense. So either it's a machine that only has enough power to do it one more time,
mm-hmm.
or there's something built in that would give some limitations to this not just being something that you could, you know, just keep firing like a Nerf gun.
Yeah, exactly. Nerf gun. What's the thing that the genie says? Unlimited cosmic power in a Nerf gun.
Yeah, in a Nerf gun. Infinite
living space in a Nerf gun. It's amazing. It's a great comparison. Mole will have the final say and have to choose between using it for luck or to bring back Quajon using the world route. That was your other prediction. Super solid. Like, I would be baffled if that wasn't the way that it went.
Mm.
In terms of the listeners' predictions, Sci-Fi Brony says Fred will fly the ISS Enterprise in to save the day.
Oh, Fred.
Just on his own.
I kind of love that. I just want Fred to come back.
Any prediction with Fred is a winner. David also thinks that the world route will bring Book's planet back. Lots of people emailed that in and seem to agree. Wondering also thought that the Pretender tech will be used to bring back Book's planet. However, slightly got the name of Book's people wrong. I think the planet is called Quajon, and they are Quajons. They are not Quajzen or what's it's called. just to clarify, wondering. Just, I think you may have got part of that wrong.
Oh, that's. That's Danae level right there.
Yeah, Quajena, what's it's called. Mm-hmm. It's close. One final prediction from Wandering. The progenitor tech takes some kind of input to work. Energy and matter has to come from somewhere, which effectively means sucking the life out of someone, an individual or a group.
We've thought about on the that, scale. That there would be some kind of a trade, and that's really interesting. What if Maul gives up her life because she doesn't bring Locke back so that he can have his whole planet back?
Right. That would be beautiful. It would be kind of great. What I like is that the Wandering thinks that the progenitors themselves ended up consuming their entire civilization in order to seed the galaxy. So they gave up themselves to create all of these different civilizations. That's beautiful. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, that would be a great story. I love this part of the show where we'll like reflect on other possible ways that mm-hmm. the writers could write. But at the end of the day, we're watching their version of like the best that they can provide for us. And I'm like, I think I'm going to be okay with that, whatever it looks like.
Yeah, I think so too. There's always the, what if they'd known this was the last season?
Yeah.
And I've got a great example of that from, this is from Nick. I was going to mention it in the sins later on. It's a sin that he had for last week's episode. And that instead of Book, wouldn't it have been beautiful if the hologram inside Burnham's dreamscape had been Spock?
Right?
Wouldn't that have been a beautiful, because she knows that she's never going to see Spock again.
Yeah.
And it would have been beautiful. Or her dad, Sarek. She's never going to see him again as well. Or her mum, Amanda. Like,
it's so narrow-minded.
Like, yeah, it feels very narrow. This is a person she's known for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Spock would have been so much more powerful. And we would have had Ethan Peck on screen.
Which is a win-win. But for the show to kind of say, well, the most important storyline here is...
The boyfriend.
The boyfriend. The potential love interest that is...
It's hard.
It's hard, yeah.
It's hard for me to get on board with that, yeah.
And also, okay, so we can also just go one step deeper there and say the show itself said, she's like, oh, I wish you were Tilly. So it was even still trying to give it into its active cast rather than part of her character arc.
Yeah. Yep, no, totally with you on that one. Well, my final prediction is that it's the Borg, because we can't seem to end anything without it being the Borg.
Oh, Lord. Oh,
or
no.
It's all a hologram on the Enterprise-D. And there we go. With that, let's head over to our holodeck to watch Discovery Season 5, Episode 9, LaGrange Point. We'll see you over in 10 Forward, 2 to beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the programmable matter station. I've finally got there on episode 9 and share our media thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first, what is your thing of choice?
Ooh.
And why is it a Breen oil bath?
Yeah, I'm, what I'm having. Curious about that.
They went along with that. So good. Now we know that the Breen are either very sexually positive and open, or this one specific Breen is and but got very lucky.
Yeah, we don't know the answer to that until, you know, 20 years from now when they decide to really just get into the Breen stuff.
Yeah.
And some super fan says, I remember from the episode of Star Trek Discovery that they went here, and so that was a super convenient thing.
That's 100% how it works, because if you go to like Memory Alpha, I was like googling some stuff during the episode, and like minutes after the episode goes out, there are updates, and it's now the stuff on there is like delivered as, this is everything we know about the Breen now, and it will add stuff in and stuff about Raina, and it like references this episode and stuff. Yeah. So anything that is put on screen, mm-hmm, immediately in the lore book.
It's there. It's there. It's present. It's ready.
It's amazing.
I think the oil bath is the only answer.
Mm, I think so. I think it is. Yeah. So let's give us a synopsis.
Okay. Well, the only thing that matters about this episode is the last 12 seconds.
Right. It's so funny.
Yeah. So in today's episode, Discovery makes it to the Progenitor's tech, but so does the Breen. The Breen gets it on board. And so the Discovery crew has to board the Breen dreadnought and
it's time to heist.
Try to take it back. Things go squiffy. And all assumptions about who is going to die this episode are stalled for next episode.
If you could hear that, I don't know if I'll put it in the outtakes, but if you could hear the audio of us throughout the episode, it's Reese is going to die. Raina's dead.
He's dead.
Adira is
dead.
All dead. Saru's dead. Like, everyone was on the chopping block. Book's dead.
They're all dead. Yeah. The captain and Maul have gone into the Progenitor's portal, which
they sure have,
holds the tech. So it looks the keg was encasing a portal to make it less maybe obvious to anyone who could come across it, mm-hmm, because it's not scannable. And so far there's multiple Breen that have gone through, Maul has gone through, and yeah, Michael has gone through. So whatever's on the other side, I guess we're going to see next episode. We're also going to likely see the arrival of the second dreadnought, which is there, yeah, to
Tahal.
Yeah, it's there. Oh my God. Are we going to have the moment when Locke walks out of the portal like some sort of Breen Jesus, and then everyone like scions to him? Is that next episode?
I think so. I think it's setting up some really interesting things. Like Tahal is the Breen that subjugated Raina's planet. So
right,
having her turn up and go head to head with Raina is, yeah, that's some nice setup work there.
And the chef's kiss of this episode is obviously how Raina takes captain, yeah, role of Discovery. And it is, for me, a pretty sweet payoff, and I'm excited to talk about today's episode.
Yeah, completely agree with you there. So let's dive straight into it. We open spinning camera immediately.
Oh, so much.
It makes me so dizzy. Discovery does this so much. I guess it's supposed to mirror the spore drive spinning, but there's, yeah, a lot of opening episodes with spinning and people looking busy and then beaming in and my head hurt.
You know, it was even evident when the council was speaking, because that's also part of today's episode, is that obviously Starfleet or the Federation is, yeah, now aware that there has been this Breen encounter. They're aware of the Breen being activated. And so they're on a diplomatic angle attempting to figure out how to buy the Discovery time or help them. And so they have their own little mini mission that they've got going on. But even in that scene, what the camera does is really interesting to me. And I noticed it more this time than ever before. So if I watched Discovery back and just thought about camera angles, I think we'd have a lot to talk about. But most of it would just be moving camera. The answer to every scene is just moving camera. But the president would start off on the far right of screen, and then the camera would just slowly pan. And it would just be kind of the idea of a movement back and forth in conversation, and then someone else would speak and the camera would just swipe across their face slowly and then go back over, and it just it really gave this episode those kinds of moments and the others this intense feeling of motion. When we were in movement the entire episode, this is the fastest episode I've watched so far. I did not realize we were at the end, which is a huge compliment.
Yeah, it's a huge compliment. It does keep the pacing in this episode is incredible. The movement, like you said, keeps it going. It keeps the urgency. We don't, because there's so much happening on the Discovery side of things, it's really clever when you immediately cut to the important diplomacy stuff to not lose that momentum as well. I think I only felt it when Saru was in his quarters reviewing some stuff, Tarina comes in and they have their last hug. That was the only time where I was like, okay, let's go. But the rest of the momentum was absolutely great. So it won't come as a surprise that Jonathan Frakes directed this episode.
Oh, Frakes, you fucking genius.
Right. He knows how to direct.
And, you know, just remember, he listens to the show, so we're a huge fan.
Flippin' wish. Yeah, no, as soon as you see Frakes in the credits, you're like, good episode, let's go. I'm comfortable. Yeah.
It is a compliment to the show, too, then, that when the two characters that you don't want to connect did connect, you didn't feel the pull down of the momentum, because Michael and Book have a moment where they pop over, and if that didn't piss you off and distract you.
Yeah. It pissed me off like stubbing my toe, but not like a really bad one. It's like I'm on the way to the kitchen because I'm really hungry and I'm excited for my food. I stub my toe on the way. I get past it really quick because I know I've got some great food coming. Like, it was irritating and it was dumb and there's no time for it, but they did need that moment. I kind of wish it had been on the... It's such a subtle difference, but on the way to the shuttlecraft... Like, on the Breen ship. Like, just do it when you have a second to breathe when you're replicating the Breen clothes, or Stamets is doing his calculations for something during the repair work. But no, other than that, pacing in this episode is incredible. I love a good heist episode. I know it's not the be-all and end-all of this adventure, but it does anchor it down into here's the task, here's the mission. They throw in some curveballs and the plan doesn't go exactly as you'd expect. And
which is good, because it shouldn't.
They're lucky it went as well as it did, to be completely honest, really.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah, there's a balance, too, in this one where it's like a heist episode where sometimes they let the scientist explain the plan.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just like, you got a plan, do it. Like,
problem
I love
science later.
When Michael said... When he's like, I think I got a plan. She's like, just do it. I don't even... I don't need to hear it. Just do what you got to do. And I
really
love that moment. Because it kind of should have been for everything. Like, if you think you got it, do it. But
we
do need to tell you something. We do need to tell you that you've got to fly in to their shuttle bay.
Yeah.
You're ramming the shuttle bay.
Oh, it was so great.
Just that was so fucking cool.
You want to go straight to that? It was visually beautiful. I loved...
Well, you're going to play us reacting, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
In the outtakes?
Yeah, I'll include that in the outtakes.
Because we were definitely vocal.
It was amazing because it reminded me, and I'm sure this is deliberate, you know those birds that tuck their wings in and they dive into the water to grab the fish and then come back up?
Yeah.
Discovery tucked in its detachable nacelles. Like,
did
they
it?
Weren't at, yeah, they weren't at the side of the ship. They were above the like the body of the ship. They
I
were
didn't
tucked
catch
in.
That.
It was so good. So the saucers, usually the nacelles... are kind of like out from the saucer section. So if you were looking at it dead on, you see the saucer section and then nacelles, if you like, on a plane. They were tucked in so that the saucer section was like the widest point. And it just like, I know you don't need to be necessarily streamlined in space, but for this plan to work, the detached nacelles were tucked in super tight and then just nosedive into the shuttle bay.
It looked so
such
badass.
A cool shot.
Yeah.
Really, really, really cool.
When I was watching that final scene, I was having so much fun.
Yeah.
Not only like I was like letting my hoops and hollers come out because it was really exciting, but then I was also thinking about just the culmination of the work that they've been doing in the previous episodes to arrive at this moment where Rainer is taking control.
Yes.
And to give us the little clues, like he paces and he makes people uncomfortable. And that moment between the Rainer and Tilly was, I loved it. It was maybe
it was
my
great.
Favorite scene in this episode. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like obviously the crashing into the shuttle bay was fucking epic, but like
great character moment,
that kind of moment when he's like, do you know why I picked you as my number one? And then he's like, so don't make me want to kill you by you know, please
stop. For your emotions
and
it Tilly, wasn't for that, it was because I respect how smart you are, like,
and she
you
was
have great plans. Yeah,
she had a couple of amazing moments. We start off the episode with one of her amazing moments, and
we do
you know, there's a lot of interesting conversations where the plan is in motion. The plan has to be something that is just fluid, kind of like chasing a goat in the woods. That'll make sense in the outtakes. Mm-hmm. You just kind of have to trust that everybody is going to do what they're going to do, have minimal conversations about it, mm-hmm. and just fucking go because you're out of time. Like, you have to catch this tech.
Mm-hmm. I love when Discovery arrives at the black holes and the jump drive, the spore drive nonsense is happening because it can't be super accurate, so they're stuck and they're trying to get out. I love the way that Mary Wiseman acts out Tilly's like amazement and like intrigue with this is a binary black hole system, and she's like slipping in some facts about why it's interesting, and then she's like, no, not now, not the time. Yeah. Like, she's fighting that scientific curiosity in favor of we're all going to die if I don't figure out. Like, there was a nuance to like how she delivered that, which was so fun.
Like, she's a huge fan of their imminent death because of where they're at.
This is amazing.
Like, the binary sort of idea. And we were right that the tech was tucked in between.
Yeah.
Like, we kind of made that assumption that the tech mm-hmm. was tucked in between these two huge whatevers.
That balancing point between two huge black holes.
And there it was, just like we said. And Tilly is just like, this is so cool.
I wish we weren't dying right now because this is fascinating. Like, there's so much cool science that she's having to overlook.
They're all really invested for obviously they love their crew. They're invested because they understand the stakes, and they're also still big fans of what they're doing. And it was a nice balance of having some fun while also being a highly serious situation. Another big situation that was very serious that I could just pick up from the acting of how good this team of creative people are, the writers, the directors, the cinematographers.
It's beautiful.
Everything is just the CGI, everything's going so well. But mm-hmm. the moment when I don't remember their name, but they're like, there's the spore guy and then spore sidekick.
Adira
decides to go on this away mission. Mm-hmm. And you just felt the weight of that. You felt the weight of it. And I remember back to Tilly letting one of her students go do something when mm-hmm. we were on the racing in the sand planet episode.
Yeah.
And because we had that conversation, I realized that Tilly is choosing to not protect Adira mm-hmm. by saying, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
She's letting her go. And the same thing is happening with Saru and his counterpart,
Tarina,
Vulcan High Priestess lady.
President, but yes.
You know, also choosing not to intervene and say, Saru, please don't go. But
yeah, like, I liked how that was handled. Yeah. That felt very Vulcan. It felt mm-hmm. very practical.
Yes, I love that conversation.
It felt like how it should and would go down.
Yeah.
That does lead me on to this episode is setting up, at least in my brain that watches so much content and can't help but see flags and stuff that's being telegraphed. I've never seen so many people telegraphed as possibly dying, probably since like 24 or Lost. I'm like, which one is it? There are so many red herrings here that I won't be surprised if, I don't know, the Federation president ends up dying. Like, Rayna is set up for this grudge match against T'Hol because he's now happily the captain and going face to face with, she's going to turn up and that there's going to be a confrontation.
He's going to kill her. She's going to kill him. Like, they're going to equalize maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Burnham and Book have reconciled, which means they're ready to get back together.
Oh,
which
they're
means
not ready to die.
Either of them could. Yeah. They now have a reason to be alive, which is each other, which means they both die.
Book is going to give his life for his planet.
Perfect. That will happen.
Bye, Book.
Bye, Book. Adira was being set up to die. Saru was being set up to die. Everyone is on the chopping block.
Adira is being set up to die, and then it cuts over to Spore Boy, and Spore Boy scientist guy is like going to step in and take over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And fulfill his feeling of like his life purpose has been
eternal duty. He's struggling with a purpose.
The fact that the possibility of this progenitor tech saying potentially, because we don't know for sure, that you could give your life to do something more means that everybody that's on screen could do that.
Yes, exactly. And there's no clear winner.
And their death wouldn't be a void. It would be like, oh, well, their death had a purpose. So you're right. If we were going to be playing a game, you know, like in the car, like you get in the car and you have a car game you play, like a little car bingo. Mm-hmm. We could just have a dead people bingo and just
a Deadpool, if you will.
my God. We should have a, like, a little bingo card of everybody and just see who gets bingo
someone
first.
Someone gets a hat.
Next week.
Someone wins a hat if they guess the right person to die. Man, the only shocking thing would be if they all die or nobody dies.
I mean, what if they all just give their life? They just ram the entire ship through the portal. They all give their life, and then it starts over at the beginning, and we start over with, like, the original series kicking up.
Oh, my gosh. That would be amazing. I think I would love that. Yeah, it's really interesting, and it's one of the things about Discovery being the furthest point in the future that we know about.
Right.
Like, Strange New Worlds, we know to a degree what happens next, unless they branch into a different timeline, which they've been very clear that they're not. They are in our time.
Gotcha.
So Discovery, whatever happens to Discovery, this is kind of all new and kind of anything can happen if they want.
I'm thinking about the time that you told me that they kind of broke the show with the spore drive thing.
100%. Yeah.
So then they sent themselves into the future. And now what are they doing? They're potentially breaking everything by creating progenitor tech.
Yes.
The writers just can't help themselves.
Can't help it. And then we're just going to go all the way. We're going to send it all the way back in time. Maybe they end up seeding the galaxy themselves. Because that was one of the early predictions from somebody that emailed in, was they end up going back in time to seed the galaxy because of this portal stuff.
But this episode is setting up the next episode, obviously. And the next episode is the final one.
Yeah. Yep. Episode 10. Last one.
So next episode, we're not only going to wrap up the story that they have given us, but also the entire show. And we know that next episode is when they reshot things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if they had to essentially take this massive story that they've been building and just cut stuff out to give more time to the wrapping up of the end of the story. Like, I'm wondering if we're not going to get a lot of time with Rainer because he's going to die and they're going to, like, cut him out. You know what I mean?
I think that makes sense for network TV. When you have your streaming brain on, you're not limited by time. Like, Stranger Things could do whatever it wanted with that season. There's no reason that this episode can't be 90 minutes. We probably don't want it to be that long.
Like,
for the
if they're
going to
put a show like they did today, where you don't look at the time, like, give me 90 minutes. But
yeah. Like, they could make this an hour and 15. Like, if this is an hour and 15 minutes, then I'm like, okay, that 15 minutes, they gave them 15 minutes to shoot some additional stuff and do that and intertwine it into the story a bit. If it's 45 to 50 minutes like this week I'll be confused.
If they do let Book go through and then that's the end of that character, then they're going to wrap up Michael. And maybe we should spend more time on this next week of kind of assuming where that's going to be going. But we are looking at, like, through the lens of this being their final gift to the Star Trek universe. Like, there's them against the Breen, and then where are they choosing to land these characters in the timeline so that we have our quote-unquote happy ending for the characters that they have chosen to sort of be the remaining ones.
Yeah.
And we obviously know it's not Fred. You know, Fred's not going to make it now. He's really dead now. We have to just, we have to accept it.
Yeah, just let's let him go. It was a nice little nod, a little gift. I hope there's more Freds out there. That's what I'm taking away. There's probably many.
And maybe that's like, we can collect them, you know, like a little collection.
Collect all the Soong type androids. Because Burnham and Book were just like, oh, cool, Soong type android, makes sense. Which means there might be more. That's probably not what the showrunners thought Star Trek podcasts would be talking about, but naive.
To be clear, I think other Star Trek podcasts
it can't be just us. We can't be the only data obsessed people. Not a chance.
I don't know. Well, we'll probably all find each other at, like, Star Trek conventions if you and I ever decide to go to a Star Trek convention, and we go as, like, the Soong ones. Like, we're not going as Data. We're now the Soong models.
Yeah. Now we can. I can keep my beard. Yeah. Finally, we can have an android with a beard. That wasn't just one episode.
Okay, so go with me here, and then we'll talk about the show. Okay, so you have a beard, but, like, you take...
Oh, no.
Just go with me here.
Nope.
You shave off...
Nope.
Just go with me here. Half of your beard, like, just... can we shut up? And just, like, from, like, the lip kind of up to the, like, the jaw, kind of like that, and then we take a prosthetic... Hold it, go with me here. And we reattach your beard hair to the prosthetic... so that it looks like you have a flap that opens in your beard. That's like amazing. That's one of your access panels. Yeah. It's actually hidden in your beard.
That is amazing. That would be the second character to use a prosthetic beard in the show.
What?
Yeah, that's happened.
My God.
That's happened in. It happens in.
Stop
yeah.
it.
I think I've told you about this. So you know, Riker.
The beard?
You know, Riker has a transporter double. Like they did the beaming thing, and he ends up getting duplicated, and then they pick him up, and there's two Rikers.
Okay, I forgot that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but now I'm having fantasies. So
yeah,
go on.
As many people did, including Deanna,
of course.
Thomas
Deanna.
Riker goes
Thomas.
Off.
Thomas,
because his middle name is Thomas, but he never liked it. But this transporter double does like it. Goes off, and this has nothing to do with Discovery. It's amazing.
I'm so sorry, everybody listening.
He ends up joining the McKee, and appears in Deep Space Nine, and they think it's Riker, but it is Thomas Riker. Disguised as Commander Riker, and everyone just believes him, and it's fine until big reveal. He steals the Defiant, pulls off the side of his beard to reveal just a goatee, and that's the big reveal. That
oh my god,
he literally pulls off his sideburns to reveal just a goatee, and we're all just like, it's Thomas Riker.
That is such a goatee equals evil cliche.
100%. It's incredible.
But that doesn't count. That's not a prosthetic.
It was.
I'm talking about like a data panel.
It was a prosthetic beard. And he pulled it off for the purposes of the show. It was amazing.
But my idea is that the panel would reveal like a little
perfect.
Like a little data thing. How like it was always awkward when he pulls his fingertip off?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Or like when
I'm
he pulls his head thingy off.
But there's no reason for me to shave half my beard for that.
Sure there is. Why? You have to, because it needs to be it needs to be hidden under the beard
hair. But that's fine. What? No, because then I just, what? So this is the layer of my face, skin, my actual beard, the panel, so the circuitry that is on top of my actual beard, and then fake beard on top of that. So the circuitry that we reveal with the fake beard is covering my real beard. Yeah. There's no need to shave off my beard for this.
Like that you're thinking that we would actually do it
you
anyway.
Actually wouldn't.
We would never actually do this. It's just a great idea in my imagination. Let's move on to the show. Why aren't we talking about
talk
the show,
about
Captain?
I want to talk about Raina. Raina had a...
You're always derailing us.
Yeah, my bad. That's because, big reveal, I am Thomas Whittington. Just pull off my sideburns.
Thomas.
Amazing.
Wouldn't you be
actually,
Gary
I'd be
Whittington?
Gary, yeah, I'd be Gary Whittington. Yeah, that was... I missed that. Raina. I do want to talk about Raina in this episode a bit. He was
love him.
This is so dumb. It's nothing to do with Raina, but I want to rewatch this. But as Discovery does the spore jump and arrives at the black holes, everyone kind of goes crazy. Did you see that, like, Raina did this awesome moonwalk slide thing at his panel?
No.
It was just a great little bit of, like, physical direction where everyone kind of gets shaken, but his entire body, like, just slides in position, like, just across the deck. It looked really, really cool.
Those little details that an actor can sprinkle in, like Saru with his arms waving
his
in the background.
Kelp just palms.
These little things that can kind of make it look even more realistic I'm so glad that you noticed that.
It's
just a testament to them doing their very best for the show.
I loved it. He was just great throughout the episode. I liked the little touch of he doesn't want to sit in the chair. And I thought, oh, come on, that's so cliche. But somehow, when he sits in the fucking chair, I got tingles.
Oh, shit.
I was like, how did you do that to me? I knew this was coming. But it
like,
was just well executed.
Power.
Yeah.
It was power.
He's like, I'll sit in the chair when I'm ready. And it's like, oh, he is ready.
and he is ready in like the most commanding position that he can possibly have. Yeah. And at this point, the crew is on board.
They are with
they
him.
Are
Even
when
book.
He was giving when he was giving the orders for his side of things to support A and B team.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. I was so in it because they're like, yes, like I don't even remember what they said, yes, Commander, or something like this. And I was like, oh my god, this is so fucking good.
And he just like he points to like Tilly. He's like, that's the plan. That's what we're gonna do. And she's like, oh
And it was great because when we cut to him before he sits in the chair, I think the Tilly conversation had happened, but he was basically prepping, it doesn't matter, but he was prepping his side for, this is what we're ready for. Mm-hmm. Are you guys ready? Are we have everything ready to go? Like, he was making sure. So sometimes I feel like when there's an away mission on some of the episodes that I'm kind of comparing to that I watched growing up, it's like the TV would cut away and would go to the away team, and they're having their away team thing. And then all of a sudden it's like, already beam back. And they'd beam him back. Yeah. We really wouldn't see how the ship was preparing to be ready for.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was really intense because obviously the stakes are super high and they're against a major thing. Like, you know, he decided to be the distraction to buy them a moment that ultimately didn't pay off.
No,
but it could have.
It did buy, it kind of, it should have done, because it did buy them enough time. The thing that fell apart was the thing that was always going to fall apart, because when they slapped the did they call it a transpo instead of a transporter?
I don't know. Like, relay thingy?
Yeah, the transporter emitter, whatever it was, the target
lock thing.
The
gigantic blinking thing that wasn't supposed to be there.
That was always going to go wrong, because they slapped it on, and as soon as they did that, it alerted everyone. So whether it could have gone completely smoothly up until that point, and they still would have been caught as soon as they slapped that thing on. I thought it was meant to be immediate, but that had like a convenient 5-second countdown, and then Mol whips it off. Mm-hmm. What else did we love about this episode? So I guess we've got the reveal that they get into the keg of destiny, and it's a portal that's just eating people and just sending in breen after breen.
Yeah. It reminds me of that portal in the time travel episode where they just had the voice.
Oh, the Guardian of Forever.
The Guardian of Time. Yeah. Well, it's like this just kind of goes someplace. Mm. And a powerful portal that goes someplace.
Oh, man. If they end up in the past and they have to save the woman.
Their
mission is to save the woman from Kirk and Spock.
It's to undo what Kirk did.
No, Burnham's driving the car. Burnham has to kill her.
Oh, fuck!
You've got to run over this woman and have no idea why. She doesn't even know who Kirk is. She'll just see Spock in the background. That would be amazing.
It would be horrible.
It would be incredible. what it reminded me of is the Iconians. Now, I think we've seen this episode. We haven't done it as a podcast episode, but we've watched it together. This is like the Iconians had this gateway technology. The sister ship of the Enterprise, their captain goes on a mission to find the archaeological remains of the Iconians, because they have like super duper technology. He gets blown up. Picard follows, and they find this planet that has this like control center and then a gateway that shifts through different locations. Data gets zapped and overwritten, and they can walk through these gateways to get to different places in the entire galaxy, and they can just appear there.
Yeah.
And eventually Picard has to walk. So Worf walks through because it lands on the Enterprise bridge, and Picard walks through and it lands him on the Romulan bridge.
That's right. I do remember that. We watched that a long time ago.
Yeah, that was like two or three years ago we watched that one. It's a great, great episode. But it reminds me of that Iconian tech. And it would be cool if the progenitors worked with the Iconians to make this like kind of portal hopping technology.
How much time do you want to spend in the portal next episode?
Oh, interesting. Want is an interesting word.
Like for you as just a fan of Star Trek, if you...
Depends,
you know,
what's in there.
Yeah, but how much time do you want to dedicate to inside that tech?
Well, if it depends on what's in there, because they just said it's an extra dimensional gateway, which is like anything. Fine, it's like a pocket universe. It's like a bag of holding, perhaps. So if the tech is in there, and it's also the control room where you make the decision of how, when, where, what you're using the technology for, then I'm okay. Spending a chunk of time in there, but what I imagine is that we're going to have a lot of cutting between being in there and then Raina fending off the Breen Armada. I think I'd like Discovery to just fly into this portal, just fly right in there,
so,
and let
great,
them all
right?
be dealing with it. I think if it's just Michael and Mol in there doing their thing, I'm less interested.
Yeah,
I kind
me
of
too.
Want, I think I'd want them to, whatever's in there, bring it out so that the whole crew can deal with it and have this issue. Or else I'm just going to want to be with Raina on Discovery.
Well, it's the clue is build the shape of the one between the many.
Yeah, that could mean
and
so much.
I thought that that meant that they needed to put the key into the barrel while they were actually floating in space.
Yeah.
Because it was like the one part to build the shape of it.
Yeah, I thought it was going to close. When Mole opened it places. Up, I yeah. thought as soon as like, because you'd opened it up in the wrong place, I thought it was just going to eat the breen and then close again and they have to try again somewhere
Me too.
Else. But that must relate to something inside there. Yeah, it's so vague. That could mean so much.
They have to do something with this progenitor tech. They need to tell us what it is, how it works, and what the sacrifices for using it will be. And so I think we need to be inside that universe long enough to feel satisfied at how much this season has been teasing us with this technology. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it could be zero and I would be happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just they just come out at some point in time and they're just covered in goop. Like, okay, we did it. You know,
it's bogeys. It's all just covered in bogeys.
Because the idea, I think, is that the tech is inside the portal somewhere. So they can, they've kept
it safe in like a pocket portal.
Yeah. So if they just popped out and said, like, that, and they were just covered in bruises and scrapes from like beating each other up, and then one of them has the tech and the other one doesn't. I would be satisfied. I don't need to know what's in the portal unless it's about the technology.
Yeah.
But there is a chance that because Maul does not have the information that she needs, that this thing is going to kill anybody who can't answer the question that Michael has in her mind.
This is it. Like, Maul is the definition of the person that shouldn't get this tech and yet is getting very close to. So I hope that that plays into the final piece of the puzzle, because again, like Raina once again says, to make sure that like you have that extra bit of information, and that's to make sure that the seekers are worthy. Mol is not, unless there's some massive bits of information we're missing, Mol is not worthy of this technology. Like that's been made really, really clear.
Not so, according to our, you know, earthly way of doing things.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, that's a whole other element of it. It's like, what is your morals and ethics, how they change. But what is interesting is that they chose deliberately this episode for Mole to put a transporter buffer on Lack, and to
he's in there too,
and he's in there with her, which I was like, yep, you're absolutely setting that up. Like, there's a reason that his body is now in there with her. Like, she's gonna have to make that choice, and I think you're right. I think she will end up leaning towards whatever Burnham wants to do and whatever that decision might be. But they don't have the world route. So it's not like it's going to be a toss-up between Book's planet and Luck unless they bring the technology out of the portal with them.
Yeah. Tech's got to come out of the portal.
Yeah.
And I think I don't need to see any of that making sense. I would be upset if we spent 20% of next episode inside the portal having all of the conversations and blah, 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 and then bringing the tech out, knowing that it's the final episode. So I think my answer really honestly is zero. I don't need to know what happens inside, because you could tell me in four sentences when you get out and I would be like, okay, cool, I didn't really miss anything except for some maybe cool CGI. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Unless it's like mind-bogglingly, like universe-shatteringly important, like what's on the other side of that portal. Like, if we end up in Captain Picard's ready room, then I'm intrigued. Like, there's got to be something. I don't want to, if it's just a void white space, like Kovic's place or Q's dimension, that what if it's Q's dimension? What if it's a gateway to the Q continuum? Now I'm interested. No, but if it's just like a white landscape, I'm not interested. Yeah, just bring it all back in and let the Discovery deal with it.
Because we just spent the Mindscape episode, I just don't think we need to do another one like that at the final. I think it would be the fact that we're going to have another Dreadnought show up. We're going to have Seru going against a Dreadnought, one shuttle on one Dreadnought. We're going to have a political conversation.
Yeah, that was really smart.
Somehow, maybe they capture Seru and bring him over, and that's how he gets back to Discovery. Like, there's going to be some interesting stuff going on, and it's going to feel fast-paced. Yeah. And my fear is that the balance that maybe the writers are going to try to have is to send us back into this portal where things are calmer or whatever, just to kind of give us a break from the pacing a little bit. Mm-hmm. And maybe you've got, you know, Michael and you've got Maul, and outside of it is all this chaos and eruption and war breaking out. And then they pop out with the answer and fix everything at the very final moment. Yeah. And I just, I feel like I don't want that to be what they do. I'm worried about it. And that's my prediction, out of order. And we're doing everything out of order these days. Yeah, we don't actually remember to do pips. We don't remember to do predictions. Yes, we're just so in the moment.
Oh, no. In the edit, it sounds great. I just stick everything in the right sections. It's fine. We sound incredible. I think you're right. I'm mildly concerned about the separation thing. Like, I know for, like, pacing and structure, you want to have interesting things to cut between. But the portal is worrying, isn't it? Like, separating Marl and Burnham and the tech from the crew and, like, what's going on outside. But
we'll see what happens next week. But for an episode, for setting up next week, I really liked this episode. I liked that they had they replicated the Breen outfit. Obviously, it's just you got to go with it, that they can understand the language and that they're able to mimic the behavior well enough to kind of blend in.
So much hand waviness in this episode.
Which was kind of fun to see them get, like, really sassy. And then we have, like, the super close-up visual of their face with all of the, you know, and how do they fight when they can only see out of 10%? We don't, like, there's a lot that we could pick apart.
The Stormtrooper problem.
But it was still a really fun episode.
This episode could have, like, I had a great time. This could, if we were sending this one on TV Sins, then there would be, like, a bonus round for, like, excellent at TV Sins, because everything they hand wave away, they acknowledge. It's like, I know we haven't got time for this. And, oh, Xeno Anthropology coming in clutch again. And problem now, science later. Like, just a bonus round. Just let it happen. It's
let
fine.
The episode send itself.
No lube. Just let it happen. We've said this already, but the pacing is incredible in this episode. We finally get to see firing phases and Discovery doing some shit, and they go, like, consistent instead of, like, pew, 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 the phaser fire, the laser beam of phaser instead of stuff, and even a bit of, like, Picard was like pew, 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 like laser bullets. I just love seeing the laser beam, and it's blue, just like the original Enterprise had the blue phaser fire, and then firing torpedoes and shit. And I'm just like, this is, I know it's not Star Wars, but I do love it when Star Trek can fire some phasers.
Well, we don't get to see it very often because most of the time the Federation is attempting to avoid conflict.
Ugh.
So our conflict resolution is large in part communication minded or just
that.
Little.
I do.
Yeah, I do too. But then when you get to see us actually show what we're capable of to defend ourselves, it is exciting. But it only took up just the smallest bit of that episode. But it was so fucking cool.
It's like you appreciate the lightsabers more in Star Wars in the original movies because they're only there for 10 seconds. And then in the sequels and the prequels, they're there for like 17 hours. So you don't appreciate them as much. But yeah, they did make that Discovery attack scene was so, so good. I almost want you to, like, rewatch the tucking the nacelles in, because so good.
I want to rewatch that on a larger screen instead of my little computer screen, because I think it just needs it.
Beautiful.
A couple things before we move on, though, I wanted to say there's a couple things, and I think I was trying to make this point earlier and then I got distracted. The passion that this crew has to succeed, there's a couple of moments that I really enjoyed. We talked about Rainer, and he says this line, failure is not an option, and it reminded me of how, like, we're going to see the fullness of how he led his crew and how different it is. And I just believed it so much. And I think the crew is like, fuck yes. Because they're all ready to die, to war for this, to war for their captain. And they're at that point of, like, fear isn't really an option. We're just jumping in.
Yeah.
We're in too far.
Yeah.
And you do need to have a war kind of minded captain in a way. And they're going to face his own enemy. So when he said failure is not an option, I don't know. I really believed that moment.
I love that confidence, because, like, when Burnham took the captain's chair, understandably, a lot of self-doubt. When Tilly has had to be in command, a lot of self-doubt. Even when Saru has had to be in command, he has his own very intellectual style, but there was some self-doubt. Rainer is such a clever choice as an overall arc. He has been such a clever choice to be number one. He has been captain before, so you can understand why he's confident to get back in the chair. And we've established he's a great war captain. He's like Churchill. Great leader in times of war, arguably. batshit outside of war, like, because there's this adrenaline that he runs at and this like sharp decision making that doesn't work as well and isn't as needed during peacetime. So I buy that he slips right into the captain's chair, he has the captain's experience, and that this is the reason that he is now comfortable to lead the crew. It's like, battle stations, everyone, this is where I come into my own. And the show hasn't had to morph him into the kinder captain. Yeah,
it is such a juicy payoff for me, because if I imagine anyone else in the captain's chair in that moment, I kind of imagine that the crew, so let's say that it was like Charlie, Reese, whoever, let's just say Charlie's better, Linus, or somebody that they know, right? And he sits down in the chair, he's like, failure is not an option. And they're like, remembering that he's like, hey, could you pop this pimple on my back? It's really itching. Yeah. Like they have way too much camaraderie with each other. And Rainer is just not that person. No. This is someone who's a mystery to them, who's been specifically like very distant, but also proving that he knows how to still relate, but more in a tactical fashion. Mm. So when he says it, I just feel like everyone just solidifies around that confidence because they need it. And I don't think it would come if they had just seen their buddy like overeat at the salad bar the night before and have a tummy ache. Yeah, you know?
Exactly. It's really great. Like the other balance that they've managed really, really well is the Rainer not undermining and subverting Michael as well. Like, they haven't pushed
him. Still would have been a good storyline, I say.
They haven't pushed him anywhere near being fluffy and cuddly, but they also didn't force him to go the other way of just like butting heads with her just for the sake of butting heads. Like, he's such a comforting character to be around in his confidence.
And we wondered early on, how are we going to feel about this character later? What are they doing with him?
And why is he even here? Why do it now?
We questioned a couple times what they were doing sidelining this great character.
Yeah.
And I feel as though there was a lot more to do, but their story isn't the Rainer story. Their story is the Breen story.
Yeah.
And so they've done a great job of not spending too much time making us a mystery and instead building our confidence, because to build to that moment.
Oh, that was great.
When we are watching it going, let's go. Like, we're freaking out.
Yeah.
I'm chills all up and down my body. Like, I had the hair on my arms was standing up and I was so fucking excited because I believe in Rainer. And I'm like, oh, they did that to me.
Yeah, they did.
And it's powerful.
Really subtly.
I know we talked about that a lot. The other one that I want to mention, though, is don't piss off the scientist guy, because Spore Boy, I believe his passion is to get Adira back.
Yes.
So like, there, it's just so subtle in these moments, but when he's doing his math to ram into the space or whatever.
And he's actually got the drawings, like his little equations on the whiteboard, on the imaginary board. I loved it.
Yes. And his husband is there saying, are you sure? And he looks at him and he's like, math doesn't lie. And he was so passionate and confident, and almost like, do it because I need my people back. Like, he was so possessive of his crew. And kind of like I'm believing Rainer, that really worked for me, because that moment in the conference room when he was not really wanting Adira to go, this is him having control to get her back. And I just, those passionate moments really, really sung for me. Tilly's humor as she delivered her lines, like when Rainer figured out Michael's plan and relayed it to the crew and they're all getting on board, and she was like, oh, shit, you know, and she's covering her mouth because she was excited. Yep. It just, everything was singing for me. By the end, I don't know that I've had that much of a reaction to an episode before. I was really excited about it.
That's awesome. That's so fun. And you couldn't have this every single week, because a lot of this comes from great people doing great things because they're great at that thing. Like, he's confident the math works. He's like, I wouldn't be suggesting this if I wasn't confident in the math. Like, the math backs me up. This is going to work. That's it, plain and simple. Adira's plan is great. She knows that they know that they're great at hacking. And they deliver on that. Reese knows his role.
Yeah.
Book does whatever Book does. everybody is in their role and singing. And that's the great thing about penultimate episodes, is that you don't have to have the, oh, I fucked up, let's do some deep character work. It's everyone's kind of performing at their A game.
You're right. And it's not just the characters performing at their A game.
Yeah.
This is the writers and the directors performing at their A game.
Everyone shows up for freaks.
You could show me a penultimate episode that's just like, I don't believe any of this shit because none of the stuff that happened in the season really matches with this tone. They're obviously just, they're doing their, you know, big vibrato, that's singing, bravado before the finale, and it's kind of unearned. But in this case, having been watching it so intently, I really think that they made choices, especially with Rainer's character and sprinkling in other things with these characters, to make me believe this moment. And that is something that, as a skeptical person, I really, really appreciate.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm able to have fun because I'm not always like, I'm not really looking to not have a good time. It's just, it takes a lot to really entertain me as to capture my attention. I have so much other things going on in my life right now that I should be paying attention to. So for me to sit down and actually invest in something like this and have a good time, I'm really having a good time. I'm not pretending. If I didn't like the episode, you would know about it. And I was really, really enjoying it. And it's not, you know, it's not just the character writing. It's everything that's working. I'm really impressed. That was really fun.
Yeah, it was really, really fun. And I think it's great.
I'm really nervous for next week, though.
I'm not nervous. I think there's been enough great in this season that I'm just like, I think you can stick the landing almost any which way and I'll be okay. I'll be fine. As long as you don't stick us in a room with Book and Burnham for 50 minutes talking about feelings, I think I'll be okay.
Yeah, as long as Michael's not holding a baby at the end, I think we're going to be fine.
I mean, unless they're holding that baby.
A little hybrid druid baby.
You would love that. I think you mentioned this earlier, but it speaks volumes that when we cut back to the diplomacy stuff with Tarina and the Federation planet and Saru's plan, the fact that we cut back to that talking I didn't notice a drop in tension or pacing there. It was really, really well done. I think we spent the right amount of time at there.
I do too. They did a really good job because when we first see Saru talking to Michael, it's a debrief and just a quick check-in and I'll be there kind of a moment. They don't spend too much time on it. And in the other parts, I think it's kind of important for us to remember that Discovery isn't necessarily all on their own, but they are in it's a very precarious situation. I thought that they did a good job there.
Yeah, I think so,
too. But there are some sins.
There are some sins. Just one last couple mentions of transport stuff, because I'm the nerd and I like it. We got a mention of transwarp tunnels, which is what the Borg established to get across the galaxy really quickly. They were being used by the Breen. So we have some access to transwarp tunnels. And the Pathway Program, which is what Saru's shuttle is using instead of warp drive and instead of spore tech, to get there really, really quickly. And the pathway drive is like this alternate to warp travel that was developed when the burn destroyed all of the dilithium. So I just thought it was really cool. And I would love to know more about those things and hopefully we do in the spin-offs. What pippage would you give this before we start the sinage?
All of them.
All four?
Yeah. I had a fucking great time. Pippa.
It was a really solid episode. Really, really, really fun.
Yeah.
Great heist that was nonsensical with great action. Great setup for next week and great character work with Rainer. Love it. Well, with that, let's head over to engineering to do some sins. Battle stations, black alert. Black alert. Black alert. Black alert. This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV shows without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Go for it, Ambassador. Kick us off.
A lot of these are mentioned, so I'm not going to spend much time, but the opening scene, spinny cam, dome, calculations, walking, beaming, flowers, excitement.
Vomit? There was a lot.
There was no vomiting.
There was from me. That scene was like so much exposition, like, and they just hang a lantern on it because Tarina's like, we thought it was, there have been some developments, but we thought it was best not to tell you until you got here. But the only reason for that is so that you can have like an expositional previously on, like with Saru right in front of us. Just tell him on the way. Why does that have to be in person? Like, it's not like, I didn't want to tell you that I accidentally killed the cat, because I wanted to tell you in person so that you wouldn't be mad by text message. Just, it's way more efficient. Like, what else was he doing on the ride over here? Like, let him do his research and get briefed on the journey. It doesn't have to be in person. Seemed inefficient.
Sin, bringing flowers from another planet inside without
telling
me that you scanned it.
Yeah.
Like, maybe a little quick line that it went through the proper channels, because we all know on Earth how bad it is to take a plant from one place to another without really making sure that it's not going to have a massively negative impact. And also, in the world of Star Trek, beaming plants anywhere has gone wrong, I've heard.
You get too vexed.
I've heard.
This is how you
I've
get cerued and planted. Man, we need to do some of those Notorious episodes. We really do. Most of it would be in Voyager. My next note was, your cloak is fucked. Just lose it. they're talking about like maintaining power from the cloak to because you have to stay invisible. Those external shots, I know they were kind of for our benefit, but that cloak was looking fucked up.
It was pretty cool, though.
It looks great. It was fucking cool. You're visible. You must be visible, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that cloak is just lose the cloak and just divert power. But you need, I guess they need that for the story.
I would have a silly sin like Donkey Kong is not in this episode.
Why?
Like with the whole barrel thing.
Oh.
Or maybe like as an outtake at the very end of the Sins episode.
His eyes going
just
wide.
Like have Donkey Kong grab the barrel and like hold it over his head, you know?
He just has the brain get the tractor beam and pull it in.
Yeah.
He's like just, numb.
He's holding on to it.
That'd be amazing. Well, in that moment, I did look through our CinemaSins Discord and some emails, and basically everybody was like, why the fuck was Discovery looking at it and just admiring it and going, the progenitor's tech, and then the brain just swoop in and go yoink immediately.
Yeah.
Tractor beam, bring it in. Discovery, you got there first, and then you masturbated in front of it forever, and then the brain just come in and steal it.
Yeah, that was my next one too, is like, well, okay, so if they can beam it, why can't you?
I like
or tractor. Yeah, yeah. I didn't understand why all of a sudden the brain can do that.
I mean, I thought,
and it was so fast.
Yeah, I thought there was a reason that Discovery couldn't until the brain came in and just did it. So they can't do it then because they don't want to reveal that they haven't been blown up. But you needed to do it before the brain got there.
You did. That was an important part of the puzzle.
The whole point of you getting there first and risking the spore drum. Mm-hmm. But I did also laugh when they were like, we got an incoming brain warp signature. Oh, when are they going to be here? Now.
Boom.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and then you're like, oh, we really just kind of sat there a little bit too long, didn't we?
Yeah.
Kind of forgot we were in a hurry, I guess. My next one is, my sin was just, good thing the unconscious brain guy can have his face scanned and they can get in there, I guess. Like, we don't really understand how the technology works.
Not at all.
I kind of assumed that it would go sort of scan the helmet and then like go into the helmet a bit and then scan the goopy juices.
But
the goopy juices were unconscious, so the computer can't tell that the being inside of the suit is an unconscious being.
I get the impression it's very much linked to the suits, because like their like science division stuff, their emblems, like Michael changed the one on her chest, Reese noticed the insignia on the side of the arm. I think everything is linked to those suits.
Well, obviously.
So I
now
think
we know
the scanner is
a good job, scanner.
It's why it's absolutely bonkers the replicating worked. Like, we went from, we know nothing about the brain, to let's replicate their suits. They don't get picked up. The brain don't scan that there are humans inside of these suits. Like,
no,
it's
there's
bad. So much
it's
of
weird.
That heist plan that was completely hand-waved. Like, there should be alarm bells. Like, they couldn't detect the transporter signature going into the ship, into the shuttle bay. Like, you have to wave all of that away to have the fun heisty stuff happen. But it's
which
pretty huge. Like, this dreadnought ship should have spotted them.
It should have been like imagine that somebody is cosplaying as like a warrior or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wearing like, I don't know, something that if you were standing by the actual person historically, you would look like you're wearing a paper bag.
It would be like the horns on the Viking helmet. It's like, we don't have horns on our helmets. What's going on? And then, oh, that's how we find out we were wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, or like you're cosplaying as a samurai warrior and all of a sudden you're standing beside one and it's very evident that you're wearing something completely over
and
the top.
Quite offensive.
So it is a shock to me that any of that worked, but
completely.
It did.
And speaking of that plan, we have a Star Wars Death Star run gap in the shields exhaust vent cliche. Whoever is inventing, developing, creating exhaust vents in these futuristic societies, or prehistoric in the case of Star Wars, need to get their exhaust vent shit together, because it's always the exhaust vent. There's always a gap in the shields.
There's always an anus somewhere that has to just remain open. Otherwise, you don't have proper ventilation or just, you know, proper function.
And if that is an exploit that every ship has, maybe, just maybe, that's where you base your security. Maybe that's where, just as a coincidence,
probably so.
All of security is always there. You have extra just shielding, always. Something internal.
Something.
But no, that's always the way. But you got to have a way in.
I know they'd already been caught, but my next one is put your helmets back on, goddammit. In the fight scene.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when
Discovery's going to attack.
Yeah. So it's great. We can see who Michael and Book are now, and they're not just another Breen in the background.
Yeah.
And so, of course, now I can more visually tell who I'm rooting for, and that's helpful. But it probably would help a bit in a fight for you to wear some head protection.
Yeah.
Of really
just
any
put
kind.
It back on. Just put it back on. Yeah.
Plus, there's a chance that if you like jump behind something and then you pop out, they're like, oh, is that our Breen or not our Breen? So you're really obviously not who you're supposed to be if you keep your helmet off. Just put it back on.
Yeah, at least the helmet makes it maybe a bit ambiguous.
Maybe.
I just, man, now that I'm thinking about it, I know they've all been alerted to the presence of people because all of the alarms go off. And so they're alerted, Molly's alerted to the presence of some shenanigans on board the ship. They get found out.
She calls red alert after some of the security is missing in the shuttle bay.
There's two people missing from their post. Raina buys some more time. Michael slaps the transporter doodad on the thing. What if she just like reversed up to it and like just tucked it behind her back and like chained herself to the tree proverbially and just like covered it, and like Book and Burnham are just like human shield and Quajon shield just blocking that instead of just putting it like right at eye level, just out of the way so that Mole can take it off. Just make it difficult for Mole to get to it.
Something.
Because it looked like something they were about 2 seconds away from that plan working.
Yep. Some situational awareness would have been. How about the other two people that were in the room who had a view of where Mole was walking and could have said just a little bit to the left? Okay, you're out of the sight now.
They were on the bridge.
Oh, that's right. Okay, they were in a different spot.
The geography of that was very confusing.
It was super confusing.
Because everything inside the Breen ship looks the same. I actually thought they moved the progenitor's tech, but they hadn't. It was still down there in the cargo bay. Oof. And Reese and Adira were on the bridge.
Well, that fucking sucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe both of them not walking up to it. Maybe just send one.
Yeah. That happened very quickly and conveniently.
Having recently experienced, you know, there's no plan and then everyone's just suddenly doing a plan. I get it. Things can fall apart pretty quickly. But it seems like they had some time to be like, okay, I'm going to go up there. You watch my back. Just even that, I think, would have bought them some time.
It was going so great until it immediately collapsed in on itself. Yeah.
What about you? Do you have another one?
Yeah. This will be so funny. Book says, how are we supposed to execute this plan on a Breen infested ship? That ship is not Breen infested. It is a Breen ship with Breen people on it. It's about to be a human and Quajon infested ship.
Yeah.
It was just loud. It's Breen infested. No, the Breen are meant to be in there. That's their biome.
Yeah, you're right about
they
that.
Are not the infestation.
Here's a quick and simple one. You got Michael giving the one final look cliche.
And the smile. The smile.
Don't worry, Book. I've made peace with this decision.
Even if it kills me. Of course it won't. I a thousand times, like, you can hang a lantern on it. Burnham, you do not have time for this lovey-dovey conversation. You do.
I don't.
Not. You can say you don't have time. It doesn't make it any less true that you do not have time.
You could walk and talk.
You do not have time. Yeah. Just... You do not have time. Everything you said in that conversation could have been overheard. It wouldn't have even have been overheard because the audio stuff was working so well. They were switching between whether the other Breen could hear them or not.
With just a
effortlessly.
Thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just apparently I'm going to speak to my crew now.
Yeah.
Hey guys, what do you want to eat for dinner tonight? I was thinking tacos.
Yeah.
And then switch over to the Breen with just a thought and say, get out of my way, you fucking asshole. That quickly.
Yep.
How dare you question me?
Don't leave the open comms open by accident.
I guess meatloaf is okay.
That'll work. Is it oily?
Just immediately back and forth. Imagine doing that in real life. I don't understand. Maybe there's like a little button that they can kind of press somewhere. Like whenever you're playing a video game and you have to press the space bar or your mouse key so that you're alive.
You're still on mute. Sorry, I can't.
And then the Breen are like, why are we talking about meatloaf and what is that?
what even is meatloaf? It's amazing. I hope Meatloaf hasn't made it to the 32nd century.
It has. Absolutely.
I'm sure it has.
Yeah. I don't have any other sins. I think I kind of talked about the stuff that was a little bugging me during the main episode, so I'm pretty good.
Everyone in the Discord chat mentioned the convenient audio switcheroo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that was definitely noticed.
Yep.
Can I send ticks? It's completely unrelated to this episode, but I went to the woods this weekend and I had ticks on me.
Mm-hmm.
And now, even though they've been taken out of my body, I'm itching.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to take this time to send ticks.
The ticks absolutely exist. They'll exist somewhere and they'll be still causing trouble. Yeah. You psychologically, physically, you will feel itchy because if they've been
infested
in you, then... Yeah, if they've infested you, then they get itchy. Let's have a look. A lot of people on the CinemaSins Discord also said that they're frustrated that they're only going to get one episode or less with the tech. So, like, after all of this build-up, whichever way you look at it, unless we have a three-hour season finale, there's going to be very little time to deal with this tech, look at the ramifications, and decide what we're going to do with it, which we kind of guessed was going to happen, but it's still... I mean, if they stick the landing, great. But there's always going to be this, man, wouldn't it have been cool if we had more time with it? Because it's so big. It's huge. It's the biggest technology.
But I think the point is that the technology is something that only certain people should have access to.
Mm-hmm.
There were plans put in place to protect it. Now those plans are gone. By the way, I guess Sin, okay, great, you opened the portal and now it's just open.
Yeah.
How do you put the barrel back on it?
Well, this... trying to shove the portal back into the keg.
There were scientists that did this. They really protect... And I know that was Maul. Maul did that, not us, but still. Like, I just want to believe that they would have just left it in the barrel and then that, you know?
Yeah.
Just leave it alone.
Leave it.
You've gotten far enough. You don't need to keep going. Because at some point, they're going to open it up and then it's going to be like, okay, now we can use it. And then, of course...
Little Pandora's box situation.
Quajon's going to be like, I'm going to recreate my planet. And he's going to jump in with his little...
The Romulans could rebuild their planet.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, what planet would you then not choose to save? Like, there's some Prime Directive squiffiness that goes in there as well. Like, which planet is justified? Especially if it's once every 800 years that you can use this tech, which planet gets to come back first? So, yeah. There was also some super convenience behind... When the keg, like, does its little barrel roll and it hits in there, literally, and it hits, like, the bit of debris and spins and it explodes... I thought that was going to be a bigger deal. I thought they were going to flip out and be like, oh no, it's been destroyed. And no, it's no big deal. Luckily, the keg was designed to still work, even though it's been destroyed, and just unleashed the portal, and that's fine. I thought it'd be a bigger deal that the keg was damaged, but no. It's interesting. Maybe we'll get the answers next week. There's a couple of sins I wanted to include from last week's episode from a couple of people that... that emailed in. We have a sin removal that the Dreamscape was using nucleonic beam technology, which is the same technology that's used in The Inner Light, which is the episode I described where Picard is forced to live an entire other life because of a probe. So there was a deliberate nod to, yeah, we know what this is relating back to. We're using the same technology. So
that's
yeah,
cool.
I like that. That's pretty, pretty cool. And Nick mentioned... Oh, no, I mentioned that earlier. That was Spock should have been the cameo, not Book. And David had a good point with how was the archive able and the library able to jump around into different positions when the burn had rendered warp drive basically inoperable, and shouldn't it have been blown up during the burn? And I think it's got to be using technology that isn't dilithium based and isn't warp based my response to that.
It's the kind of technology that also has no defense system.
Yeah, exactly. It's great at moving around, crap at defending itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've basically talked about our kind of thoughts for the next episode. What are, just to cement them, the final things that you want to see next week? And is there any big out of the blue crazy swing that you want to throw in there?
Everybody dies.
Yeah, 100% everybody dies.
I don't know. I think I've kind of talked about my predictions, you know, as we've been chatting about this episode, because I can kind of, I feel like I see where they're trying to go, but so I don't have anything new to add, I don't think.
Well, next week's episode is called Life Itself. I think we've pretty much covered all of our kind of predictions. It's hard to not talk about predictions as we go through the show when we're in the penultimate episode. So no dedicated prediction section this week. If you do have any predictions yourselves, send them in to captainspod@cinemasins.com or join the CinemaSins Discord, discord.gg@cinemasins, and we'll include them at the top of next week's show, especially if you have any wild predictions.
discord.gg/cinemasins.
What did I say?
At.
Oh, for crying out loud. Don't listen to me. discord.gg/cinemasins.
I think the link is in our description.
It is in the description. Just do that. None of you look at the description. Don't worry about that. It's fine. You'll figure it out. Well, that's everything for this week. We hope you enjoyed the episode as well. We had a blast. And until next week, I'm Captain Ian, and it's science later, problem now for me.
And if we were in a foxhole together, I wouldn't kill you.
Should have realized. Should have known you'd do that one. And that raises questions about how foxholes work. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
It is Captain's Pod time. Holy heck, and yes. Holy heck. Oh my dear. Ooh, pretty. What does this button do?
Do you want to hear something fun?
Is it the cat meowing in the background?
Nearly.
Because then I can hear that.
Now, I was, obviously, I'm in Aaron's studio, and I can hear, like, you know, when you have, like, a tab, you're like, there's a tab playing music somewhere, and I can't find it. So I have, like, my profile signed in, my work profile. I have my personal profile signed in because that's where Paramount Plus is. And then Aaron still has some of his windows open. So I have collectively 11 tabs to track down. And I go through all 11 of these tabs. And I'm like, there's YouTube there, but that's not playing. It's not Paramount Plus. There is nothing anywhere. And then I look at the board and it's coming from your mic. It's because I could hear something playing in your room.
What? How could you hear something from my room?
It was a show of some sort. Like, did you have your phone playing a show?
Yeah, but it was like in the next room.
Yeah, that's what I could hear.
How could you hear that?
I don't know, but I also heard that you opened the door to let the dogs out, like the bell going boop, boop, boop. So I'm trying to find a tab that isn't even on this computer. It's on your phone.
Can I tell you a story? It's not.
Please.
It's not quite as fun.
Oh, okay. Then no.
Oh, okay. So I'm bleeding, and not because I'm a woman.
Okay, yeah, that immediate first question, yeah.
Uh-huh, usually it's just like, well, thank you for telling me about your cycle.
Yeah, thank you for letting me know that you're going to be in pain right now.
Mm-hmm. No. I was too close to the kitty playing. Can you see?
Oh, no, yeah, that's a cut. And that stings,
It's probably 2 inches long.
Oh, longer. And
it's just solid blood.
Yeah, like 4 inches deep. You've had a couple of injuries over the last couple of days. I don't know if we're going to get into them today or save it for the live show.
What?
We won't remember. We'll forget. No. We'll forget everything. You should talk about what you want to talk about.
I'm just saying, like, everybody always wants to know about animal stories, and I do have an epic animal story, and we didn't do a live show, and so they're going to miss me visually telling it, but I don't think that we should avoid telling it,
no,
right?
I don't think so. It's incredible. Every week we get asked, what's the animal story this week, Danae? And invariably, you actually have one, and this, like, this would be the instigator of animal stories, not, like, an additional one.
Yeah, this is one that I don't even know how it's, like...
Well, it starts with allowing me to be on a farm. That's the cold open.
That's true. You play a part in this animal story.
I do.
So I have a longtime friend who purchased a piece of property 3 years ago and has been homesteading on it. I think I've talked about it a couple of times.
Purchased it blind with your approval.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
I always forget that part.
They purchased it. Yeah, they purchased it based on me and my parents going to the land to say, yep, this is a good one.
Yeah. I mean, you have loads of experience in scoping out land for homesteading.
Yeah, I sure have done it one time. 3 years ago, when I was on the property, they had given this task. Just walk the land. Tell us what you think. My dad's input was
integral.
Paramount. Yeah, it was 100%. it was really important. But my dad really liked the property. I need to look for certain things like, does it have level ground? When it rains, does the rain run off? Or is it like a swamp? Like, there's just stuff that you can kind of...
Yeah, that would be my first thought. Nice. I feel good about that. I was like, is it bog?
Yeah.
We know we don't want bog.
Right. Bog equal mosquitoes.
And the creatures from Neverending Story, the Swamp of Sadness.
That's
right. We
don't
want that.
Yeah. No, we don't want any horses to be going into the Swamp of Sadness. So little things like that, I was able to weigh in on, but I kept thinking, like, I've got to do more. And so when I first visited the land, I, like, at one point got down on the ground and just started digging into the ground.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Just to be like, okay, yeah. I think this looks like pretty good soil. But that's like, it's a soil sample from like one random 2-inch section of 5 acres of land.
That's not how sampling works.
So anyways, they invited me and you, Ian, come out and celebrate their 3 years of homesteading. Mm-hmm. So a lot has changed since they first got on the property. They just basically pulled up their camper and plugged it into the power outlet that we set up for them, and then just started to develop how to survive on the land. And it's been amazing to see.
It's incredible. Like, I didn't... So I knew when you took this trip to scope out the land for her, and that they were still like, they're in a different state, and then so they couldn't get here to look at it, but I wanted it. At that point, I didn't realize the weight of what that decision was. Like, this is where they will be living. This is where they will grow their food. This is where they will grow the produce to make money so that they can buy the things that they can't grow or build themselves. Like, and then 3 years later, they're still there and doing an incredible job. And then all of that comes back to, hey, Danae, do you want to look at that land? Like, that, I don't think you can comprehend the weight of that in
I
the
did.
Moment. Yeah, I did not. That's incredible.
And they have this really interesting ecosystem there. And it was so fun to be on the land. And one of the new things that happened was the arrival of two goats, which brings us to the story.
What great timing. They didn't know that they didn't super plan the goats to be delivered yesterday, but they were.
They were. And Ian, do you want to tell your part of the story?
Yeah, I'll tell my part. So I'm just hanging out with the goats and with one other person. I was not completely unattended. And they decide to go in and feed the goats by hand, just to like kind of give them like a little bit of attention and to get familiarized. There's a crucial part of this goat enclosure where they haven't quite finished the door yet. And I had Danae's City Girl coffee in my hand, and I decided, oh, I need to give this back to Danae. And the second I turned my back and decided to walk towards you, one of these little goats just made a break for it. I was like, this is my chance, let's go. There was a pallet leaning up against the door. This little goat charged the door, knocked the pallet over, and as I spin around, it's free and it is out. And then it is battle stations. I've never seen a group of people mobilize quicker. It was immediate red alert.
It really was. I was hanging out. Like, the end of the story is, can we just skip to the end?
Yeah, if you want.
I caught the goat.
Danae caught the goat. There were seven of us. Danae was the one that caught the goat.
It was likely a 15-minute charade.
Less than that. Honestly, it felt longer. It was done in like 7 minutes. Like, under 10 minutes, I guarantee it. Multiple people nicked by barbed wire, including myself.
Which is how I got injured. So I have this bleeding cat scratch on my hand from today when I just miscalculated playing with the cat, got too close. And then up my tricep, I have a nice scrape from a barbed wire fence that I fell into and managed to only clip my arm and scrape my arm open. And I have banged up knees because I jumped into a bush to tackle this goat that had been, I don't know, how long do you think it was escaped? Like 45 minutes, an hour? We were out there forever.
I was like, did I not have that conversation? Yeah, you got me.
Initially, the goat runs off. This is a baby goat. This is the first time away from mom.
Like, weeks old.
It gets out of the pen and it just starts running towards the back of the property. The back of the property has the barbed wire fence, and then the adjacent property is well maintained, mostly open And then like a little gully that has a thick copse of wood with like fallen trees and really big, gigantic
ticks.
Trunks that have kind of fell from storms and all the branches. And we don't want the goat to go back there, obviously, but it does. It just easily just jumps to the barbed wire.
Oh, the second someone was like, we need to get the goat away from the barbed wire, it immediately runs through the barbed wire, just if it heard us.
So the three people that were originally starting this kind of thought, okay, are we going to be able to catch the goat quickly? And then there was this tipping point where the owner, my friend on the property, turns back to me and says, all hands on deck. And I was like, all hands on deck. Immediately, I became the crier. And then everyone who was just chilling various places around the property are just there. And one guy in particular, who was like the neighbor's part of like the group of the people that live next door and the family there, he just turns into, he was the guy, we were talking about Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, we were like getting deep into like subclasses on Baldur's Gate, different D&D paths nerds that you can take.
I was like, sweet, there is a guy who lives in the middle of fucking nowhere who loves Baldur's Gate. We're talking about everything. And he was the super nerd. He's the Pokemon guy. And all of a sudden, he turns into the farm superhero and just takes off running through the wood.
And then we're like, what? Where did that come from? And someone's like, oh yeah, he's active military. Oh, that makes sense.
He fucking clears. He jumps the barbed wire fence and he goes taking off on this little thing who obviously goes into the deep woods.
Well, it's amazing because he jumped the fence, like had one hand placed in the perfect place, one hand on the post, and then like just hooked, jumped over. I very daintily and very carefully like kind of get through the wires and I get nicked. And I'm like, well, I should have just mavericked it and just jumped the fence.
We worked well together. I do have to say, I was like, I'll pull this fence over for you. Yep. We've been talking about how funny it would be if we ran the Amazing Race together.
Yes. And this got very close. Yep.
The entire time this is going on.
Catch the goat. This is the worst challenge ever.
I'm thinking about watching The Challenge, watching Survivor, all these shows where you've got ordinary people doing insane things. And this was it for me. My whole thing was trying to keep pointing at the goat because I could see the goat and other people couldn't. So people knew they could look at me and kind of get a gauge. Like I was the goat compass.
Yes.
And I was in the very back line. Purpose. Yeah, I was in the very back line. And everybody's getting gassed because they're really like up with the goat. And we're trying to like pin this thing in. Seven people getting closer and closer and closer and trying to, you know, herd this thing to somewhere. And then it escapes and starts running towards me. And I was like, oh shit, this is when it's go time. It's goat time. I start running. Now, when we told this story to Justin, Justin was like, Danae, you ran?
Well, what was great is that he said, now, hang on, let's stop the story right here. Yeah. There are two times that I've seen Danae run. One of them was to chase an old dog that we had. The second time was last Christmas to chase her mum's dog. And I'm like, you know what? There's a pattern here. And Justin's like, I think I know what happened. Did an animal get out?
He did.
And you're like, yep.
It's so true. So I am tracking, like, I'm parallel with this goat. And let me just tell you, this is when I clip myself and get hurt or whatever. But then the lady who also lives kind of in the wooded area and she's used to farm life, she's sort of like, at this point, we were in the back, but now we're the front. And everyone else, like I said, is gassed. Like, I look over at the neighbor guy that turned into, from Baldur's Gate paladin in the game to a true life paladin.
Yeah.
He was, like, summoning spells goat and paladin. Shit. He was crazy. Yeah, he was the goat paladin. He was red in the face and was gassed. Like, he was done.
He was covering ground. Yeah.
He was like, get it! Like, he was just desperate. And this goat, I had this, like, one moment where everything split into all these different possibilities.
You saw the Doctor Strange, all of the infinite outcomes, yes, and only one is victory.
And then, like, echoing in my ear was, this is it! Go now! Oh, oh. That was, like, the neighbor lady, and she was, like, yelling, like, it's now. And I kind of tuned back in, and this fucking goat jumped into a bush and got a little disoriented, and that was it. I jumped into the bush, and I got the fucking goat.
It just doesn't sound believable.
It doesn't.
It's insane. It's such an insane story.
My favorite part, I like look up and the neighbor guy, is the happiest.
Yeah.
Like, he, they know how important livestock is.
Yes.
He was so proud. And I was like, oh my God, I get to be the one that carries the goat back to camp.
What an honor. Like, and it, to be clear, they have two goats. 50% of their goats are on the run and they've had them for hours. And it's like, this sucks. This is the worst. We did, like, they spent the afternoon telling us we're going to get milk, we're going to get cheese out of them, we're going to get soap out of them.
Yeah.
In a year or two, we're going to get another goat and we're going to breed them.
It's going to be so good.
Like, this is going to change so much. And that's all I can think about, because this is technically my fault for a lack of communication, that this, like, I just see gallons of cheese just running through the forest. I'm like, you are so important and you're gone.
We carry the goat back. I get all the blood cleaned up off of my arm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy who brought the goats comes back. He had to leave for a minute.
Yes,
and we all just kind of look up, like, watching this man who just brought goats. And we're thinking, in an alternate reality, we would be telling him, yeah, we lost it.
We lost, because the last thing he said was, they are a nightmare to catch. Like, do not let them go. He leaves for 2.5 hours. We've lost one and reclaimed it. And we just imagine him saying, I was gone for 2 hours and you've lost a goat.
The short version is, a goat got loose. 7 people ran after it. Mm-hmm. I happened to be the one that caught it at the end. I did get injured. It was totally worth it. And I think my takeaway on it was not only this fun experience for me being able to, like, access this hunter part. Like,
yeah,
I was literally, like, I looked like a football player when they're kind of, like, going back and forth, just trying to figure out where their opponents are. Oh, a basketball player, like, where they're trying to watch that ball. I was facing this goat going, which way are you going? Which way are you going? Mm-hmm. And it was really cool to experience that.
You can
not
see
something
the calculations
I feel every day.
In the goat's eyes. Like, they,
and
she
I'm
was
doing the same
doing calculations.
I had been doing calculations the whole time of going, okay, they're out there, so I'm going to fill in this blank space. Do you know, like, we just all became part of this unspoken goat grabbing system.
Yeah.
So that was really, really interesting. But then, like, the way that it just brought everybody together and how we can't recreate that. That was such a random experience, and at the end of it we were all so bonded together.
It's the first time I've truly appreciated team building exercises,
right?
Because that's what you try to replicate. This was out of necessity, and team building exercises try to replicate that, and it always feels a little bit awkward. But
right,
if you can find an organic way to do that, we were all, like, bonded after that. We were just like, we did a thing, and
it was, I haven't,
all of these strangers
that
were just, like, relaxed and, like, it's great. It's one of, like, the only times I've really understood how humans as cave people and hunter-gatherers can succeed, because I'm like, oh, we are, like, 50% of us are, like, well, not 50, 25% of us are city people or have been raised with a Walmart within 5 minutes of us or an Asda or something. And even we managed to communicate and catch the goat. I'm like, yes, goat, low-hanging fruit. It's not a wolf that's going to eat us.
Yeah.
But we did
super
it with zero knowledge,
fruit.
Zero
this
experience.
Thing is tiny.
So I could extrapolate how humans were able to hunt and do that stuff. And it's because I never believe it. I'm just like, yeah, we would hunt down buffalo and, like, we would meticulously get this mammoth thing. I was like, there's no way we did that. We can't do that. But yeah, it's crazy. Yes, I'm comparing the goat to buffalo.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. It's also kind of, you probably felt this too, when you just let go and there's this reckless abandon that happens, because we were literally running through woods.
Running. Once I was, like, over the barbed wire, I was like, something has crossed over here. I've been nicked by barbed wire. I'm in for a penny, in for a pound. Let's go. And that, like, wooded bit on the other side of the barbed wire, you don't know if, like, the wood was dead. So everything you put your foot on, your foot could go through. And the whole morning it was like, should we go for a walk, like, through the forest? And we're like, nah, I don't think we should, because there's a danger of ticks and bugs. So we'll stay close to the clearing that they've created. We wouldn't even go for a delicate walk. And now we're just running beyond where the walk is, deep in the thicket. Just, this isn't where we're supposed to be walking at all. And we are running, like, reckless abandon through it.
It was,
it's
really
so interesting,
delightful.
How, like, your priorities shift.
It's also interesting that we immediately said, hey, same time next year, let's let the goat out and do that again.
The goat running. There's a chaos part of me that just wants to do it. Just like, oh, would you look at this?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
And that's the animal story for today. I do want to talk about how cool guineas are. I do want to talk about how cool, like, mm-hmm. chickens are, and how sweet the dogs notes. Were.
Yeah.
There's so many different stories. So if you want to know anything about guineas that we saw, chickens, or the cool dogs, you know, just let us know. Because farm stories aren't for everybody. We know that. But it was very interesting.
It was amazing. We've also got, like, Iris getting into Star Trek that happened this week as well that we need to do.
Oh, my God. Yes. So I don't know if you saw this, Ian, but the dog, you know, was underneath this table. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to see the dog because of a tribble box.
Yep.
We need to talk about the tribble box.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we? Yeah. So I found the perfect way to get kids into Star Trek. And it sounds obvious now that you say it. But it really is Tribbles and Mr. Spock is the combination.
I really think that we should talk about this. And I know that we've already talked about the goats a lot. So I don't know how long you want to spend on it. It's such an important part of, like,
this is a big
my
story.
Personal, like, story. Yeah. Yeah,
this is really big. I almost want to save it for next week.
So let's save it for next week. We'll talk about it on the live show with a live audience. But let's just suffice to say, you know, it's going to be about Tribbles, but there's lots more to talk about. I saw a video of a hairy caterpillar. Have you seen this thing?
No.
Okay. There is a caterpillar. I don't know. I can't remember. You can look it up. But it looks like a mustache. It looks like a moving mustache. It's very hairy. And it popped up in my feed. And so I was watching it. And the guy pops on, you know, and he's like, do not touch this caterpillar.
Oh.
Because it has individual glands attached to individual spikes that are filled with poison. And it is, like, more excruciating than the really dangerous plant bite, you know?
Oh, yeah, huh? Yeah.
It's like, don't touch that, though. Tribbles in Star Trek? Okay. Tribbles in real life look like this caterpillar. Don't touch it.
Really? The caterpillar looks...
It looks like a fucking tribble.
That's amazing.
It's like a longer... It looks like a mustache a bit, but it's so hairy it's flat on... I know,
Iris is
going
to want to touch that.
I know! And it's super fucking dangerous.
Oh, no.
Have you found it yet? Did you look it up?
No, I'll look it up. Oh, God. Oh, you know, I see it.
It's not like it's the...
It does look like a tribble.
I fucking told you, man. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, no. Iris cannot see it.
Pus caterpillar.
Yes. Fluffy caterpillar, one of the most venomous in the U.S. Don't be fooled by the appearance. This fluffy caterpillar is one of the most venomous caterpillars in the U.S. The pus caterpillar has hidden toxic spines under its fur. What kind of an asshole is that? When your skin brushes against the pus caterpillar, or the pus caterpillar, I'm sure it's pus, spines break off, releasing an irritating fluid that produces an immediate stinging, burning sensation, like hospitalization is possible because of the pain, and you could go numb and you could, like, lose your sight for a little bit, the guy said.
This absolutely looks like a Star Trek creature, because there's one that has, like, ridges along its back where the fur is, like, bulbous. I would absolutely pet the heck out of that. It's a tribble.
It's
a tribble.
This is so where the we'll give the full story of Tribble World in our life live. I guess just a little PSA, tribbles are real on the planet. Don't touch them.
that's the one. But next week's episode, you'll catch it on the recording. But this is the story of how Iris becomes aware of Star Trek. So yeah, we'll have that in next week's outtakes, and we'll do it with the live show next week.
Holy shit! Yes! Fucking ram that out!
Touch the wheels in!
That's fucking awesome! Look at that shit! Look at that shit! Oh, that's so fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
There it goes, tumbling out into space. Okay, it's doing a hard turn. All right, everybody turn around now. Oh, he's in the chair. He's in the fucking chair. He pats the chair.
He
says, let's do this. Oh, no. The episode's over.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.